This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 12. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
0208 816 7691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name is David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway. Well, welcome to the show, Garrus. We have no Berners this week. He's on holiday.
Oh, well, we can do without him for 1 week, mate. I just don't want it to be too long because I do miss him.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, he's a key member of the team, and it's a well-deserved holiday for him. I think he's gone completely off the grid, so we'll catch up with him soon, I'm sure. Let's talk a little bit about cricket. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was an article you wrote on the Pitch Vision Academy site to do with runouts. And you were talking about the professional side and the amateur side of the stumps.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, always provokes a bit of conversation, that one. Yeah.
So what was, just for anyone who hasn't read the article, and I will link to it in the show notes, but just for anyone who hasn't read it, you were talking about a run out from a point type position aiming at the stumps.
Yeah, exactly. So it's to simulate if a right-handed batter is on strike and you're a right-handed bowler and the batter drops a ball just in front of point, just short of you, and you have to run onto it and then throw it back upon yourself. Mm-hmm. So you're throwing towards the striker's end. Back towards the wicketkeeper's end. Then the aim would be, because you're running away from the target, would be to, if you're going to miss at all, which obviously you don't want to do, but you give yourself more chance of hitting if you throw it towards the keeper's side of the stumps rather than square leg side of a stump, so because the ball will fade in the air because of your momentum that goes through. So if you're going to miss, the more preferable side to miss is the what I call a professional side, which is the wicketkeeper side of a stumps rather than the square leg side of a stumps. Because if you do that, then you've got less of an adjustment to make to get that ball to hit the stumps, rather than if you're missing it on the square leg side of things, you've got to change your throwing angle and all sorts of things, and there's a big adjustment. So we always say, you know, let's see how many times you can hit the stumps, but if you're going to miss on the professional side rather than the amateur side. The amateur side being that your momentum has dictated the line that the throw's gone on rather than you as a thrower.
So it's showing you as a coach that if it's going on to the leg side of the throw, then you know that as a coach that the skill wasn't executed quite as well as if it goes on the offside.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're looking really that the momentum of your motion and getting to a ball is actually dictated where the ball's gone, rather than your technique being able to cope with the forces that your momentum has created.
Okay, well, that's a good clarification. And if you're interested in finding out more about the technique of that particular way of running out that I think you mentioned Paul Collingwood was particularly good at.
Oh, amazing. And Ian Bell was good at it as well, but Paul Collingwood was just phenomenal at that.
Really? Really? Well, I mean, he was pretty good at most things, wasn't he, to be fair?
Yeah, but it was something that we worked on a lot because it's really specific for his position, which was cover point. So, it was massively important that we worked on it a heap, and he got so good at it, he could actually execute it back at the keeper's end, but became absolutely brilliant at working to a throw on his right-hand side where he picked up and threw in one motion to run out the guy who's dropped it into point and then gone to the bowler's end. And he used to run people out for a pastime. I can remember he got us back into a game of cricket where he ran out Michael Clarke in a one-day game at the MCG where all the momentum was going with Australia. He picked the ball up, threw the stumps down at the bowler's end, and then we got two quick wickets and ended up winning that game.
Okay, so let's move on to the yes-no round. No Berners this week to help us out with the questions, but every week, Garrus and I get the chance to say just yes or no to three questions that are posed. I will take the role of Berners. I'm not much of an impressionist, but so I'll do it in my own voice. We got the three questions, and we will see what answers we come up with. Okay, so the first question is, the Ranji Trophy should have neutral venues.
Yes.
Yes. The reverse sweep is a legitimate shot in all cricket.
Yes.
Yes. Personal experience is weak proof.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, we're a bit dull today, mate.
That was a dull one, wasn't it?
No controversy this time around.
I know. Well, we'll have to pick some more controversial questions next time around. But we need Berners to come up with some more controversial thinking. Okay, it's time for the questions round. And this is where you get your chance, if you're listening, to win a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we pick a couple of questions out of the mailbag and we answer those questions. So you can't really lose, even if you don't have your question chosen at the end of the show by Garrers to win the prize. So again, I'll be Berners this week. I'll be Mother. I'll pour the tea. And we got two questions. So the first one is from Yurov. And Yurov says, we're short of a coach. Can you tell us how we should decide roles as a team?
Well, we talked a little bit about this last week because we had a question about a bowler leading the bowling attack and being sort of like the captain of a bowling team. So this sort of follows on from it, I think, which is really good. And this is a normal situation to me is, you know, I've played a lot of club cricket, but I've never played club cricket where we've had a coach. So we had to do this a lot. And all that you do really is you look at the people that you've got within your group, you work out what skills that they have. And I don't necessarily just mean skills on the cricket field. I mean skills that they might have in their lives outside of them playing cricket and seeing how they apply into the team. So I talked a little bit last week about Stuart Broad's role for Andrew Strauss, which was his out-of-the-box thinker. So have you got somebody who's really strategic in what they do at work that comes up with some wacky ideas that actually end up being the things that whole businesses are built around? Because I'm sure that you've got somebody like that in your cricket club or in your team, and therefore they can become the sort of head tactician, the person that comes up with the different ideas when everybody's stuck. You know, we talked about the captain of the bowling team last week. Have we got somebody who's really disciplined in their practice and disciplined in their preparation? And if so, they can become the person that does the warm-ups with the teams, the cools down with the teams, and does all the fielding drills. You know, have you got somebody who's the best fielder in the team, and it's his job to get around and make sure that everybody is enthusiastic when they're in the field? You know, have you got somebody who really enjoys his batting practice, and then it's his job to pair up everybody to get into that buddy system of batting where you have a top order batter practicing with a lower order player and being in charge of the development of that lower order player, in the same way Paul Collingwood and Monty Panesar worked together for a year ahead of the Ashes in 2009, and when Monty batted for 40 minutes to save the first test and set up the series in the way that he did, Paul Collingwood was the proudest bloke on the pitch because of the work that he had done. So I think you look at what you've got around you, then look at what jobs need to be done, and then you start sticking that person next to that one. And the crucial thing is that they'll want to do that. There's no point in trying to convince somebody that they need to do that role if they've got no interest in it. So there's a little bit of a selling that has to go on, but ultimately that's normal club cricket to me. And I, as I say, I've never been involved in a team that's had a coach at club level. So we've all split up the roles and we've had pretty successful teams over the years. So it's very achievable. Have a look at what you've got. Have a look at what needs to be done in terms of the roles, and then assign people and give them feedback on how they're going and give them some development feedback as well. And you'll find that you'll be on the right track.
Yeah, it's all about building that confidence of everybody in the side, isn't it? By having everyone clearly knowing what not only they're doing themselves, but what everyone else is doing. And then you've got, once you've got the freedom to work within your role, then you can do it as best as you can. And everybody agrees that that's a good idea. So I think it's what you're talking about there, Gareth, is having a more of a formalised process of doing this thing, which is, it doesn't have to be a long drawn out formalised process, but it has to be something which is clearly stated. Because if you don't do it clearly, what will happen is, just because of the way that groups of people work together, it'll all fall out in one way or another anyway. And if you let it fall out naturally, then sometimes it doesn't fall out in the most optimal way that you think. There'll be gaps. There'll be people maybe trying to do the same role at the same time, not really sure what's going on. Maybe getting into conflict over it because, you know, they're not, or leaving it all together because person A wants to do it, person B wants to do it, and in the end neither of them do it because neither of them have got the clear responsibility to do it. So yeah, I think the first part of that process is just to sit down everybody to sit down and decide exactly what you're going to do, like you've said, Gareth. But also, it's important not to be too structured and be too much of a slave to it, I would say, because sometimes roles fall out in a way that works well without you having to define it very clearly. It just sort of happens that way. And if something changes, then you don't want to be restricted by someone being, well, this is the only thing that I do. It's like the the dour opening batsman. That's a classic role, isn't it? The dour opening batsman who sees off the new ball. Well, if it's a good batting track and he thinks he can score more quickly and he doesn't need to see off the new ball, then don't be restricted by that just because that's your role. Sometimes you can bat more aggressively if you get the bowling isn't very good and the track is very flat. Well, why should you stick slavishly to that role? And keep your eye on it is the other thing I would say, because it's changing and it should have a certain amount of flexibility with it. Keep an eye on what's happening with it and make sure that you are still sticking to your goals and your roles as you go through the season. And then any gaps pop up, you can fill them in as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think the informal thing there is really important. You don't have to have big documents about this sort of thing, really. It's but it is nice for the people to take responsibility for certain areas, and I've certainly found it's been successful in the past. You want people to be good leaders across the whole of whatever you're doing, whether it be batting, bowling, fielding, or the social element of a game or whatever. But it's nice to have people that see that is they're the captain of that area, and then they can manage people beneath them in their area of specialism.
Yeah, it's really important that everybody is involved in that process in some way or another, and especially in recreational cricket, you'll have a wide range of people who are have different things that they want to do. There'll be guys who just want to turn up, have their game of cricket, and then head off at the end of the day after they've had maybe one pint, and that'll be that. Or it's a purely a social thing for those people, and if they're good players, they may be playing at quite a decent standard where the dynamic of the rest of the team is a bit more performance orientated and a bit less socially orientated. So you have to take into account each individual person and make sure they're happy with what they're doing. And also, I think something that's often missed is that make sure that everyone's happy with what everybody else is doing as well. But that is, I think that's just the natural course of the way that a team develops over time. And it's going to be very different if you've got a side who have been together for 15 years with very few changes in personnel than if you've got a team who have just come together because you've just formed, or it's a new regional level side and they've never played together before ever. There's going to be different. It's going to be a different process. Have you seen that? Have you seen that difference, Gareth, where it's a more established team and things are more set? And it's harder to make changes than, say, a team that has just come together.
Yeah, and probably don't need to make too many changes because they've been working with each other for a long time and probably established a lot of this stuff without even thinking about it too much. So yeah, I mean, it's easier to get these structures in place with new teams, or a captain maybe going into a new club and setting a new culture in there. It's easy to do that stuff then, but a lot of the time these things happen fairly organically anyway. So just have a bit of fun with it, really, and just because you haven't got a coach doesn't mean you say you're in any disadvantage, I don't think.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, if a coach is just another role, isn't it? So you can fill in those gaps with people who, maybe you've got someone in the side who, coaches the under 15s, and they fancy doing a bit of work with the senior players as well. Well, that's that they've got someone there who can do something. So it's all about thinking these things through. I think that's the key message, isn't it? Think it through. Make sure you haven't got any gaps there, and that's as formal as you need to get. You don't need to be having 12 team meetings and producing a 100-page document which is leather bound.
I agree.
Have you ever had that in professional sides? A lot of paperwork.
Yeah, a little bit, and I've done it myself, really, on one occasion, and it worked really, really well. But it can be something that's very much overplayed. And there was a bit of a trend, I suppose, after England won the World Cup in 2003, Rugby World Cup. There was a bit of a trend to go towards the leather-bound books and all of that, because Clive Woodward did it so successfully with the England rugby team. But actually, you know, they can gather dust very easily and become obsolete very quickly if they're not adhered to. So, yeah, it's just all about good behaviours, isn't it? And good things that add to a culture. And I'm sure everybody that's listening to this podcast has experienced that either in their working lives or in their sporting lives. So it's not a new concept. It's just a matter of sitting down, having a few chats, not going over the top too much, and just being responsible. And if you do that, then often your performances on the pitch, when you prepare properly and get everything in place, tend to increase and improve.
Yeah, absolutely. Cricket is a lot to do with clarity, confidence through clarity, and roles are a great way to be clear. Right, let's have the next question. This is from Raish, and he says, I'm a left-handed medium pace bowler. I'm interested in taking up spin bowling, but due to the lack of spin coaches here at my local club in the Netherlands, I turn to your tips on spin bowling. So thank you very much for that. My coaches discourage me to try spin bowling, as I still struggle to get my line and length right while focusing on getting as much spin on the ball as possible. How can I convince them to let me practice my spin bowling, as I'm sure practice is the answer to getting my line and length right?
Yeah, good question. I think really you've got to do some work away from that practice environment, because it sounds as if you've got to convince some people that bowling spin is the way for you. So you'll get the opportunity of doing that in your practice environment. And he's had a few mentions this week, but Monty Panesar was a good example of this. So Monty used to bowl seamers when he was very young, and was quite successful bowling seamers. But he decided that he was going to teach himself to bowl spin, because he saw some video of Bishan Bedi, the great Indian spinner, and he saw some similarities in his background and his family life. So he saw him as a bit of a hero and basically copied him by bowling up against a tree in a park. So he took one ball, found himself a tree that he could bowl up to. So if he didn't get his line and length perfectly right, the ball would still bounce back off of the tree trunk and come back to him, so he could continue his practice. And over a period of time, he built up some competency and some skill just through his own self-reliant practice, and then took that into his club practices. And it sounds like a very similar situation for this guy here, in that obviously bowls seamers at the moment and is seen as a seam bowler, but actually some self-reliant work away from that practice environment will give you a bit more confidence. And also when you do come round to bowling the odd spin ball in your sessions, you'll get it on the money, and then all of a sudden you'll change people's views of your own bowling. So take responsibility yourself, get it done in some independent practice, and then when you do choose the moment to bowl a few left arm spinners down, make sure you're nice and ready and get them in the right place, and I'm sure you'll change people's opinions of your bowling, and also then get some overs in matches, which is what you're ultimately looking for.
Yeah, it's very important to show that you are taking yourself seriously as a spin bowler, if that's what you feel like that is what you want to be doing, because I'm sure you know this from experience as well, Gareth. A lot of the time, if a seam bowler gets a bit tired, and he's a young lad, he'll turn to you and go, oh, I'm going to bowl spin now. And he's only doing it because he's a bit tired and a bit fed up of running up and putting a ball on the length. And he doesn't feel like he can do it so much anymore, so he's going to bowl, quote unquote, spin just to stop having to bowl properly anymore in the proper way. So if you've framed it in that terms, you bowled a lot of seam up and then you turn around towards the end of the session and go, oh, all right, I'm just going to bowl a bit of spin now, and then you throw a few in the side netting, then I can kind of understand it from the coach's point of view of saying, well, hang on a minute, you're not taking this very seriously, are you? You know, bowl seam, please, because that's what you are, as a seamer. If you go away, as you said, Gareth, if you go away and you do some work on it, and you show that you're serious about bowling spin, then the coach will take that more seriously as well. And then he can understand then. He can see that you're trying to get to a point where you can turn the ball, you can drift the ball, you can dip the ball, you can put the ball in the right spot more times than not. And then he will take a more serious view of things as well. So it'd be nice to get the coach's point of view to understand why the coach said that in the first place.
Yeah, but and it might be that you're doing a good job, or they've already got some spinners, and you can understand the coach that would be very keen to keep your seam bowling going, really. But ultimately, anything that we do in life, we're more likely to sustain it and to improve if we're passionate about it. And it sounds like you've got passion for bowling spin, and you've got a real interest in seeing how good you can be doing it. So, yeah, go back to my initial point. Get out there, do some practice on your own. You've obviously got the passion. Find yourself a big tree or a wall or whatever. Get yourself an old rickety cricket ball and get practicing. And then that passion can inform your technique, inform your tactics, inform everything about your spin bowl. And then you can take that into a practice and wear the socks off everybody. And that's the way to go.
It's a subject we often come back to, isn't it? That kind of drive, that determination to keep going and get through the dip and continue in the face of negative ideas from other people, even from yourself. Oh, I don't know if I can do this. Well, if you have that drive to keep going, then often you get through the other side and you realise that you can. And it was just a dip rather than a proof that you're not very good at something. So, and that's the story we hear time and time again from people is, you know, I kept going through the tough times and then I came out the other side and I actually realized I was quite good in the end. Skill does not appear out of nowhere. It comes from somewhere. And I think it comes from, for a lot of people, for many people, it comes from that drive to keep practicing and keep trying and do a little bit more than everybody else because it'll pay back in spades.
No, I couldn't agree more, mate. You know, you have to have that drive because it's tough, isn't it? You know, you're gonna have bad days. You're gonna have days where your technique feels really clunky, and you've got to come through that. And when you do come through it, you've often found that you've improved, and that's when things start to get really enjoyable. But you know, there's always tough days around the corners, and changing from a left arm spinner to a left arm seamer to a spinner, you're gonna have a couple of tough days, and you're gonna ask yourself that question of whether I should be doing this or not. But stick with it because you've obviously got the passion, you've got the interest, and those are two of the biggest prerequisites really for people going on and achieving some great things. Now we've come to the time of the show where David gets up on the soapbox and has a little rant and rave about whatever's on his mind. So over to you, Dave. You've got 1 minute.
There's some topics that we come back to time and time again, and it's worth reiterating them for people who are just coming into the show, and it's to do with tenacity, something that we've just been talking about, and it's to do with being a little bit like Mozart, the child prodigy who composed hundreds of works in a very short life, and many people consider him to be a genius in what he did in the composition of music. But it wasn't necessarily a natural talent. Everyone assumes he was a natural talent, but it wasn't necessarily a natural talent that was behind his secret of success. It was the fact that he started learning from a very young age from a father who was extremely good at composing classical music as well, and it took him 18 years of training before he produced a masterpiece. So sometimes you're going to have to put in your 18 years of training before you can produce a masterpiece. Okay, so that is all we've got time for on the show this week. Before we go, there's a couple of things we need to sort out. The first of which is, of course, the winner of the prize, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. We had Neuro's question on roles and how you decided without a coach, and Raishi's questions on becoming a spinner. Which did you prefer, Gareth?
I preferred the question about becoming a spinner, probably a little bit influenced by listening to a coach that's worked with Monty Panesar quite a lot recently. I sat in on a presentation that he did yesterday. So, I'm going to go with the conversion of left arm seamer into a spinner because I think that's a topical one for me.
Yeah, and we're big fans of spinners on this podcast. We you know, I've said before on different parts of the show, you know, bowling average medium pace is turning to the dark side. If you've got the ability to give the ball a rip, you should never do it. You should have build up your confidence as a spinner, and if you've got that skill, then you could do a lot more damage as a spinner than you can as a miserly medium pacer. There's plenty of those already. That's the way that I look at it.
Definitely.
Now, Gareth, if someone wanted to get in touch with the show and ask their question on bowling spin or any other cricket-related question, what would they need to do?
They could give us a call on 0208 816 7691, or they could drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, you can. You can also find us on Twitter, PV Cricket Coach. It's funny that, isn't it? That seems to be the way you go. You check out someone's website and you find people on Twitter. That's the terminology for these things. I don't know why you have to check out a website and find someone on Twitter, but that's what you have to do. So find us on Twitter. You can also find us on Facebook, Pitch Vision Academy. And it's quite exciting on the Facebook page because every day we post a video from PV Video, and you can have a look at some funny things. There's a cracker this week of a guy leaving an off break, which cuts back and takes out his off stump, and he looks very, very silly. So if you're new to that, go and take a look at that and have a little giggle at that chap's lack of judgment, the first ball that he faced of the day. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can do so by heading over to iTunes, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find us there. Just hit the subscribe button, or you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link for all the other ways of subscribing to us. So that's all for this week. We're going to go and see if we can track down Berners. But until next week, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, mate. Take care.